I'm Tony Hendra.
And I'm Jeff Chrysler.
And this is the Final Edition Radio Hour.
30 minutes of sizzling satire with teeth.
Welcome to It's in the Constitution, where experts tell us things you never knew were guaranteed by the Founding Fathers. My guests are Reverend Scott Maddox from the First Evangelical Church of Tax-Exempt Activists.
Hi.
Leon Coons from the Santa Cruz Atheist Vegan Collective.
Thanks for having me.
And Mark Lakewood, a man from Cherry Hill, New Jersey, who's mad at his girlfriend.
Great to be here.
We'll start with Reverend Maddox. What have you found for us this week in the Constitution?
Well, as long expected, it turns out Christianity is America's official religion.
But the First Amendment says we don't have an official religion.
No, but the dollar says, in God we trust, which is Christianity.
Well...
And everything on our money is in the Constitution, including numbers and Lincoln's picture.
You also say the section giving Congress the power to provide the common defense has a no-homo clause.
Actually, I'm finding that everywhere. For instance, the president shall have power to fill up all vacancies that may happen during the recess of the Senate. No homo.
By the way, I forget. Does the Constitution also recommend tax breaks for the richest 1%?
No, that's in the Bible.
Oh, right. Now, Leon, what have you and the goddess worshippers found for us?
Well, as you know, courts often debate how much power goes to the federal government and how much goes to the states.
And you've worked that out?
Yes. It turns out the Constitution vests power with the federal government on every single issue, except gay marriage and medical pot.
I see.
James Madison also said health insurance has to pay for condoms.
Okay. And finally, Mark, what did you find?
Well, according to the Constitution, if a guy wants to go to a party and his girlfriend does not want to go to that party, they have to go if the guy already went with her to some improvised movement theater thing.
The Constitution specifically mentions improvised movement theater?
Yes, and Nordstrom's.
We have a call. Hello, you're on the air with It's in the Constitution.
Hi, this is Lana. Tell Mark I found something in the Constitution, too. If a guy wants to go to a party to play video games and forget what time it is, and his girlfriend has to get up early, then Congress shall allow an exception to the improvised movement theater provision.
No homo.
Also, you're late for dinner.
I am not.
Well, that's it for us
dinner.
Here on It's in the Constitution. Be with us next week when we find out we're supposed to be able to smoke in airplanes.
The 14th Amendment guarantees that you not be a bitch, at least like once a week.
The 15th Amendment says get your ass home now or you're not getting laid for 2 weeks.
I've read the 15th Amendment. That is not in there.
And if you're not home in 2 hours, the 16th Amendment will be that all of your stuff is going to be on the front lawn.
Well, now you're just making stuff up.
This week, a new HBO film appealed to young adults and old Tea Partiers alike about two Republicans in a pre-apocalyptic world who must battle their way to survival while a starving yet obese nation watches on TV. It's called The Hunger Game Change. The final edition has an exclusive excerpt. We open with our heroes, John and Sarah, lazily lying near the border fence between the U.S. and Mexico.
You were right not to run this time, Sarah. You have bigger fish to fry, like putting crosshairs on a map or posting to Facebook.
It's much harder with the new timeline. But suppose Romney picks me for Veep.
I know people, Sarah. I'm pretty sure I used to be a military man. I could have the Air Force fly a drone plane into Romney's hotel room.
Oh, no, John. If I have to be vice president, I will. But it should come from us. You have to tell them.
No, Sarah. America still isn't ready for your homespun brand of sexy ignorance. You're a cultural contradiction, like hair metal or Kate Upton writhing around in the front seat of a convertible while chomping on a Carl's Jr. hamburger.
John, it's your patriotic duty. Remember the Revolutionary War when the British warned the Americans they were coming?
I don't remember where the toilet is, Sarah, let alone your grasp on American history.
I need to be America's first woman vice president.
As a Republican, I'm opposed to women. They want some kind of Xerox privileges.
Reproductive rights.
those two. Listen, Bristol.
Sarah.
Bristol, we had a saying in Vietnam. Keep your enemies close and don't go in the sergeant's tent after 9 if you don't want to get fragged.
What does that mean?
It means I'm going to go on CBS this morning and throw your sweat-soaked scrunchie into the ring.
Thanks, Senator. That means a lot coming from someone I don't respect.
No one has less respect for you than I do, Sarah. But you must remember, this presidential contest is a race to the death.
The loser doesn't die, John.
Not the candidate, but the economy, the nation, America itself will die. Then we will plunge the world into an uncertain dystopian future which will last until one of the ancient Mayan prophecies finally comes true.
I can see dystopia from my house.
Of course you can. You'd better get to the arena.
Welcome to the Republican Hunger Games. As we say in the GOP, may the odds be ever in your favor, but no one else's. Especially women, gays, minorities, liberals, the media, the middle class, and anyone who needs a doctor. It's time to choose your vice president!
I volunteer!
Gentlemen, but not ladies of the Republican Party, I give you the next vice president of the United States, Sarah Palin! For more about Sarah's role in the coming world apocalypse, please check her Facebook timeline.
I would have been out here a little bit sooner, but they gave me the wrong dressing room, and I couldn't find any place to put my stuff. And I don't know how you are, but I need a place to put my stuff. So that's what I've been doing back there, just trying to find a place for my stuff. You know how important that is. That's the whole meaning of life, isn't it? Trying to find a place for your stuff.
Industry observers believe the effects of skyrocketing gas prices in the U.S. are bordering on catastrophic. A new study has concluded that rising gas prices are, in fact, making people whine excessively. Harvard University professor Leopold Applewhite.
The most profound and troubling effect of these rising fuel costs is that they are forcing people to whine like bitches.
Excuse me?
Please don't confuse my meaning. I'm not using the term bitch as a disparagement for women, like a rapper or a Limbaugh. I'm talking about an actual bitch in heat. Now listen.
The study goes on to suggest that while the majority of drivers haven't yet changed their driving habits, the sound of the whining is approaching levels comparable to that of a 5-year-old being driven past a McDonald's without stopping. The Obama administration is under heavy pressure to deal with the crisis. White House spokesman Jay Carney.
We are looking into ways to stop the whining, okay? But quite honestly, we're not even sure who sets gas prices. Do you know? Do you? Could you connect us on LinkedIn or CC me on an email?
Applewhite, who teaches both economics and zoology in Cambridge, warns that the whining will increase at the same rate as gas prices and soon could become unbearable.
Most data indicate that additional Iranian saber-rattling or pipeline protests or some offshore drilling kerfuffle will inspire sounds identical to someone stomping on a bag of feral cats.
The following is a paid political message from Idiots with Guns.
Hi, I'm Bill Newport.
And I'm Chris White, on behalf of Idiots with Guns.
You know, every time someone gets in the news shooting an unarmed person, the National Rifle Association rises to defend responsible gun owners. But what about the rest of us?
The Second Amendment to the Constitution doesn't just guarantee guns for smart, responsible people. They're for everyone.
We're idiots. And we have the right to defend ourselves.
Now suppose I see a black teenager in a hoodie walking down the street at night. What am I supposed to do? Call the police? Do what they tell me? Let highly trained members of law enforcement handle the situation?
Or let's say I've just had a messy divorce, and now my kids and ex-wife are going to continue their lives without my total control.
Plus, you're drunk.
Plus, I'm drunk. So, I have to go home and kill them.
What else can you do?
Do I have another option?
Probably. But point is, we're too dumb to think of it. That's why guns must be kept safe and legal for exactly the kind of morons who really use them.
So I can defend my opinion.
And I can defend my opinion.
And I can defend my opinion.
And I can shoot you in a homosexual panic.
What?
I'm not gay!
This has been a paid political message from Idiots with Guns.
I want you off the fucking set, you prick!
I'm sorry.
No, don't just be sorry. Think for one fucking second. The fuck are you doing? Are you professional or not?
Yes, I am.
Welcome to Shark Tank. Our first contestant is looking for a big investment for his next project. He had one success, then another. Now he's out of a job. Diving headfirst into the tank from New York City, it's Keith Olbermann.
Gentlemen, much as it does not behoove me to grovel at your feet like Signor Roberto beseeching the young Don Corleone in The Godfather 2.
Who is this guy, Dennis Miller?
What do you want from us, reference boy?
I want an $8.5 million investment in return for a 1% equity in a TV show that will feature news and commentary in a countdown format.
Wasn't this show on TV before?
Very observant. It was on MSNBC, then Current TV.
Current TV? Was that on TV?
I think I got it on my toaster.
How many viewers did your show have?
It was very well received.
By how many?
I don't want to focus on a number.
Is there one?
Of course there's one.
Then what is it?
One.
One number?
One viewer.
You were on a broadcast television show with one viewer?
No. I was on a cable television show with one viewer.
Why should we invest in someone whose audience consists of the same number that he does?
It was a very, very desirable demographic.
What demographic?
The elusive 50 to 53-year-old Keith Olbermann demographic.
You're one of the few people on TV whose firings give him enough free time to watch himself on TV. But that's not enough. I'm out.
Prithee, good people, whither goest thou? Wilt thou send me raging into that good night?
You want our cash, you need our millions, and yet you speak like a character from The Crucible.
Why don't you ask Arthur Miller for the money?
At long last, have you no shame, sir?
What is this, the House Un-American Affairs Committee?
What could be more un-American than a reality show that parcels out money to losers who perform like a rhesus monkey version of Jennifer Beals in Flashdance?
Here's a reference for you. Good night and get fucked.
It's good night and good luck.
At least she had an original one, instead of cribbing from Edward R. Murrow.
I do not crib from others. As James Thurber once remarked to Alexander Wolcott...
Please! Isn't it true that despite fighting for people, you can't get along with them?
You are correct, sir. I am too big to fail, and yet I do. I mean, who can't get along with Al Gore?
The Supreme Court? The climate change deniers? Tipper?
So what? You know what? Look, history is written by the victors, but television is made by the pricks. Your point of view is needed, Keith Olbermann. For the third incarnation of Countdown, I'll give you $75. And I want a 150% stake in return for 270% of the business.
Zoinks! You wish me to suckle at the corporate teat of the crossroads of hypocrisy and commerce? At long last, have you no
shame? Spare me! Okay? Now, you're cribbing from yourself.
An Olbermann divided against himself cannot stand. I'll take it.
Next time on Shark Tank, the sharks will decide whether to give money to Keith's current TV replacement, Elliot Spitzer, who needs cash he can leave on the dresser.
Address from
public records. Old friend, why did we fail? Why don't you respond to my 99 emails? I came back in your life uninvited, cause I found your Flickr page. I got excited and I Facebook friend your kids, cause I implied it that I knew their father. Never mind, I'll find more about you. Keep on posting everything that you do. Just don't block me like this. And please forgive. I got on Google Earth and now I see where you live. I got on Google Earth and now I see where you live. You know how the time flies, I can see that on your Facebook timeline. You tried to delete our picture files, but they still exist in the Google archives. Looking at you now on webcams at your office. I like your tie, but why are you standoffish? Who's that you're flirting with? I'll call your bosses, cause for me, it isn't over. Never mind, I'll keep researching you.
Final Edition Radio Hour exclusive. Stone Peck has the details.
An unexpected development in the culture wars today. Tony Perkins, head of Washington-based Focus on the Family, the powerful conservative lobby, held an early morning press conference to announce an accommodation in the bitter standoff between fundamentalist evangelicals and advocates of same-sex rights.
Friends, society evolves, even if humans absolutely did not. For the conservative movement to remain relevant, we must accept that attitudes can change. And while male homosexuality is still an affront to God and a threat to Western civilization, We at Focus on the Family now believe female homosexuality may be acceptable in some contexts, as long as the women in question are young, physically attractive, and are wearing high-heeled shoes.
Sounds very tasteful.
Tony, what brought you to this change of heart?
Well, I was perusing the verses in Leviticus that condemn homosexuals to death, as I like to do, and I noticed that it only refers to, quote, men who lie with mankind as he lies with a woman, unquote. Now, the Almighty says nothing about women who lie with women, especially really fit young women with firm breasts and great hair.
So Focus on the Family is now going to endorse all sexual relationships between women?
No, this is a limited change in our policy. We still believe those ugly, fat, butch-type lesbians with short hair and denim jackets are an affront to all that is holy. But if two beautiful young women find themselves hungering for a man's touch and have nothing to relieve their ache but each other and a selection of toys, I think God understands. And we must, too.
Oh, this is a great set.
I've got a rolling deadline right now.
Guys, I forgot something. It would also be okay if a pair of young girlfriends of legal age, despite their appearance, perhaps wearing school uniforms, were to explore their curiosity about their bodies with each other, but only if the cinematography were absolutely top class. However, they still cannot get married. That would be gross.
And now, a message to you, personally.
Hi, I'm Larry Page, CEO of Google, and let me first assure you, we will continue answering your search requests. But after much soul-searching, we can no longer look you in the eye. We have sworn to provide the most comprehensive search engine on the internet, which means copying and pasting the entirety of human culture. Unfortunately, this exposes us to activities and desires that, frankly, have made life unpleasant. And you, personally, have been a big part of that. It's not just the naked pictures that you keep doing searches on because you refuse to bookmark them, or the 7 different addresses you have on Gmail. It's the other stuff. You know what we mean. And we know what we mean. Please don't talk about it. That makes it worse. We at Google will be professional about this. That is our job. But just know that you make us uncomfortable. And we are not friends.
He didn't want to dance. I was like dancing by myself.
I did not want to dance because...
Get up, Jerry.
I can't dance. I can't. I've got two left feet.
I thought he was kidding.
But I wasn't. I was born with two left feet.
Hi, this is Tony Hendra with part 2 of A Brief History of End Times or the Next Republican Administration. You'll recall that the year 2013 saw the inaugural address of President Romney, in which he vowed to make the world safe for theocracy and called upon Washington to, quote, tear down the wall, unquote, between church and state. February the 1st. Congress responds enthusiastically to the president's call, voting to change the meaning of D.C. in Washington, D.C., from District of Columbia to Dominion of Christ. It also passes the Lord's Portion Act, abolishing federal income tax and replacing it with a compulsory 10% tithe on personal income to be collected by the newly named ERS, Eternal Revenue Service. Bona fide churches will receive per capita proceeds according to the size of their memberships. Atheists, agnostics, and especially Wiccans do not qualify. The tithes of non-believers will be held in escrow by the government until they are born again. Churches, synagogues, and mosques experience a massive wave of conversions. Judaism is particularly popular, prompting Commentary magazine to worry if there's such a thing as too many Jews. A Times editorial responds, meh. Easter Sunday. The Rapture Index, a predictor using dozens of categories of disaster and bad news to calculate the date of Judgment Day, shoots through its own maximum possible ceiling of 225 and breaks 300. The Messiah is at hand. Judgment is only days away. Frenzied selling of stocks, real estate, precious metals, cars, boats, planes, RVs, second and third homes ensues, as fundamentalist Christians unload their worldly goods, in case Christ was really serious about that camel through the eye of a needle stuff. June 15th. Worldwide, Muslims praise Allah when U.S. and European agriculture is decimated by a raging epidemic of mad pig disease. Their jubilation is short-lived. Health authorities in Pakistan and Iran discover a raging epidemic of mad goat. August. Judgment Day turning out to be a false alarm, Nissan launches the first SSSUV, or supersize SUV, the 2014 Nissan Nebuchadnezzar. With a 25-foot wheelbase, it can easily transport 12 adult passengers, or, in the Bible Belt, 6. September. A smash hit Broadway musical attests to the growing financial clout of American Muslims. Based on the life of Yasser Arafat, it's entitled Yasser, He's My Baby.
The Final Edition Radio Hour is a production of The Final Edition, satire, avec teeth. For your fill of brilliant, cutting, and outrageous articles, images, videos, and stuff that makes you laugh, visit thefinaledition.com at least once a day. This episode's actors were Kevin Janis, Barry Lang, Darby Worley, Anne Tuchel, John Marshall, John Henry Kurtz, Peter Sagal, Jeff Chrysler, and Tony Hendra. The writers were Peter Clement, Peter Sagal, Louis Grossberger, Fisher King, John Henry Kurtz, Barry Lank, John Marshall, Jeff Chrysler, and Tony Hendra. I'll Keep Stalking You was sung by Lisa Flanagan. The keyboards and production were by Damon Petron, and it was written and produced by Barry Lank. The engineer for this show is Greg Russ. The producers are Jeff Chrysler and Tony Hendra. The Final Edition Radio Hour is a production of The Final Edition, LLC. Copyright 2012.